Chapter 11. Ahmad Khan, Indian Educator and Quran Commentator, 1884 CE. How can science be reconciled with religion? Believers from every major religious tradition have tried to answer this question since science became the key to technological progress, economic success, and, most importantly, political-military dominance. It is impossible to imagine the emergence of Western Europe, North America, or, more recently, Japan, without crediting the instrumental power of modern science. The Judeo-Christian world pegged the problem of science to the work of Charles Darwin, and especially to his concept of evolution. Instead of an active agent shaping the world and humankind, Darwin offered an innate law of nature that was neither an intelligent first cause nor an interventionist benign creator. Instead, he posited a long-term evolutionary process to explain both the continuity and change observable in the world of phenomena. The Islamic world faced the crisis of modern science not through Darwinian logic, but through European presence. By the 19th century, France, England, and the Netherlands had become major powers in parts of Africa and Asia with Muslim majorities. And among Muslim elites subjected to British rule in northern India, none was more renowned, or more reviled, than Sir Syed Ahmad Khan, 1817 to 1898. Sir Syed, as he was most often known, since he was both descended from the Prophet Muhammad's family and honored with a knighthood by the Queen of England, gained widespread fame as the foremost public intellectual of pre-partition India. His energy was prodigious, his activities numerous, and his achievements astonishing. He formed a scientific society for the translation of European scientific writings into Urdu, the literary language for most North Indian Muslims at the time. He also founded a major university, Aligarh Muslim University, for Muslim elites, and it became the benchmark for vilifying as well as praising him. It was modern precisely because its faculty, many of them initially Europeans, used English, not Urdu or Arabic or Persian, the Muslim languages for North India, to teach the range of subjects deemed important for science. Sir Syed was engaged by science, but also mindful of the demands of religion. He saw that British administration of India abetted, even if it did not directly support, Christian missionary activities aimed at all groups, but especially at Muslims. European scientific researchers also challenged Islam. Known as Orientalists because they studied Islamic texts from the Orient, they learned Arabic and Persian, and occasionally Urdu, not to become Muslims, but to assess the accuracy of Muslim claims about the sources of their belief and ritual, their law and practice. Caught between missionary polemicists and academic Orientalists, Sir Syed sought a middle way, to stress the sources as essential, the Quran above all. The Bible was also deemed important, and Sir Syed produced a unique, if partial, commentary on the Gospels, Tabyin al-Kalam, 1862. In later years, however, Sir Syed turned his attention to a new and scientific study of the Quran, 1880 to 95. He laid out principles for his modern commentary and used them as a signpost for the future that was also a buffer against the past. He critiqued the traditional commentators, such as Tabari, Razi, and Zamakhshari. They were preoccupied, in his view, with secondary problems. While they framed the Quran with reference to law or theology and defended its eloquence against poetry and other works of rhetorical excellence, these were not issues of critical import in the modern age. What was paramount now was attention to foundational principles. It was these that had to be clarified, then applied to the range of evidence in the Quran. For Sir Syed, there were 15 basic principles. They informed his commentary, and he argued, by extension, that they should inform all future commentaries. 1. God is all-powerful and all-prescient. He alone is the creator of all that is. 2. God has sent prophets, including Muhammad, to guide humankind. 3. The Quran is the authentic revelation of God's eternal word. 4. The Quran was revealed to Muhammad by divine inspiration, with or without an angelic intermediary like Gabriel. 5. Nothing in the Quran could be wrong, or incorrect, or ahistorical. 6. The divine attributes exist only in their essence. 7. The divine attributes are identical with God's self and are also eternal. 8. Though the attributes have no limits, God created the laws of nature and through them channeled His wisdom and His power. 9. Nothing in the Quran can be contrary to the laws of nature. 10. The present text of the Quran is at once complete and final. 11. Every chapter and every verse in every chapter follow a chronological order. 12. There is no such thing as abrogation, nasq, using a later text to trump an earlier one with which it seems to disagree. 13. The revelatory process of the Quran developed in stages. 14. Major teachings of the Quran, the end of time, the realm of angels, the role of demons, and the structure of the universe, cannot be contrary to the laws of nature or the teachings of modern science. They must be interpreted in light of these recent truths. 15. Both the direct and indirect expressions in Quranic language point to the possibilities of development in human society and must be studied for their relevance to contemporary social life. On the basis of these 15 principles, Sir Syed divided all Quranic verses into two categories. It was not the clear or ambiguous dyad known to Tabari and also Ja'far as-Sadiq. Instead, Sir Syed framed verses as either essential or symbolic. The essential offered the irreducible core of faith, while the symbolic were open to multiple interpretations, allowing the believer to explain ages and circumstances far removed from those of the Prophet Muhammad in early 7th century Arabia. If Sir Syed distanced himself from classical commentators, he also alienated their contemporary successors, the ulama or learned scholars. They openly opposed him, especially after he began to publish his Quran commentary serially, making each section available to an expanded reading public. Through the printed press, Sir Syed disseminated blistering attacks on his critics. The standard commentaries on the Quran and the 6 classical collections of hadith withered under the lens of his rationalist review. Many of those commentaries were demonstrable fabrications in his view, but even more, they were based on the reliability of individuals rather than a logical critique of the text itself. Sir Syed did not accept collections of hadith as a basis for true religion. At most, he argued, they could offer a historical reflection on the ideas and attitudes of the first generations of Muslims. On this point, as on others, his view elided with those of European scientizers, the textual orientalists. In all his endeavors, Sir Syed was trying to demythologize and to rationalize a book of signs. Miracles have no place in his approach to the Quran. The account of Muhammad's night journey and his conversation at the lote tree of the limit, for instance, are not to be taken at face value. They are neither physical nor spiritual experiences, but a dream. Sir Syed posited that no man, even a prophet, can have a direct vision of God. What mystics depict is due to their spiritual intensity, not to supernatural powers or the interruption of nature. A graphic example of Sir Syed's militantly rationalist approach to the Quran comes in his view of the chapter entitled Muhammad. The key phrase is, "Set them free, whether as a favor or through ransom." The phrase occurs in a passage that refers to the disposition of unbelievers whom the Muslims have fought and defeated. So when you meet in battle those who disbelieve, smite their necks. Then, when you have overcome them, make them prisoners, but afterwards set them free, whether as a favor or through ransom, so that the toils of war may be ended. Chapter 47, verse 4. For Sir Syed, this verse amounts not just to a limit on the treatment of prisoners of war, but to a categorical denial of all slavery. Implicit in this revelation is a call for the liberation of slaves. Because the verse occurred near the end of the Prophet's lifetime, when he had just re-entered Mecca in the famous peace pilgrimage, Sir Syed called it the Ayah Huriyah, the verse of liberation. He regarded its message as applicable for all Muslims in all periods. That it was not always observed, he viewed as not the fault of the Quran, but of previous generations of Muslims, or unenlightened readers of his own generation. They had failed to grasp the revelatory import of the Quran. Similarly, with reference to the age-old question of polygamy, Sir Syed did not accede to either the missionary onslaught or the Orientalist critique of Muslim practice. Instead, he showed that the key element for a valid Muslim interpretation, at once rationalist and modernist, lay in the opening verses of the chapter on women. And if you fear you cannot do justice by the orphans, then marry women who please you, 2, 3, or 4. But if you fear you won't be equitable, then one or a legitimate bondmaid of yours. That way it is easier for you not to go wrong. Chapter 4, verse 3. Emphasizing the phrase, if you fear you won't be equitable, he argues that the basis for Muslim marriage is not love, but justice. Since a man cannot treat more than one woman equitably, polygamy is inherently impossible and un-Islamic. Devout Muslims, in marriage as in ownership, must always strive to be just. The age-old custom of polygamy, still practiced in many Muslim societies, was deemed to be a case of mistaken interpretation at best, willful neglect of principle at worst. Whether interpreting the Quran to oppose slavery or to show the limits on polygamy, Sir Syed argued time and again that the work of God can never be in conflict with the Word of God. Since nature and its laws are divinely sanctioned, a book of signs will always undergird the principle and practice of science. And the scientific principle extends to religion. During a speech that he gave in Lahore, in the Padshahi Mosque built by the Emperor Shah Jahan, Sir Syed called for a new science of religious talk or theology, Ilm al-Kalam. We need a new science of theology, he urged, by which we should either refute the doctrines of modern science or show how they are in conformity with the articles of Islamic faith. For Sir Syed, the question had a clear answer. Science was unveiling the new face of God for Muslims as well as non-Muslims. The only way forward for scholars of Islam was to show how the articles of Islamic faith conform to God's wisdom and power in every age of humankind.